This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, sports bettors, ready for some picks destined to fail? It's time to hear what the Sports Daily staff thinks of the weekend games.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It's hour number two here on Sports Daily. We are glad to be with you on a Friday, getting ready for a big football week and get ready for a big football night. We got college football playoffs tonight, fellas. Before we get into this week's picks, and TJ has sent his in. He can't join today to make them live. Jad, how did last week go for us?
Well, it's too bad that TJ isn't here because I'd like to be able to congratulate him. He caught Paul.
Dang.
Wow, we've got a tie for the lead?
We have a tie for the lead. Both Paul and TJ are now 50 and 44. And, you know, TJ was actually in studio yesterday. I didn't even congratulate him. I feel terrible about it now, but, you know, what can you do?
I suppose that means that we'll just have to focus on how Paul has really blown his what once seemed like insurmountable lead in this thing.
Oh, if anybody can blow it, I can blow it. But by the way, here's my thing. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. So there you go. That's my philosophy for the day.
Okay.
Can we clip that? Can we clip that, Jad?
Sure.
Back
first
later?
Part of that there.
Yeah. Just the first part.
Just
that's
first
all we need.
All right. Let's get into this. Tonight we've got Indiana and Notre Dame. Notre Dame -7. I'll go first here because I think I might get an island. I'm going to take the Irish. Guys, Indiana is not good. Indiana hasn't played anybody. They played one team and lost by 3 touchdowns. Everybody is picking Indiana in this. Give me Notre Dame. Indiana's just not that good. Tommy?
You're not going to get an island because I'm going to take Notre Dame as well. The biggest difference maker, I think, is going to be the Fighting Irish's defense. It's really good, and it's been really good all season long. I think that they can shut down Indiana. Indiana's been a fun story. I've liked watching them. It's great that they made the CFP. I'm happy for them. I think Notre Dame wins. I don't like the number. I don't like 7. That's a stupid number for a spread to pick against. If it was 6.5, it'd be better. But it's 7. I think that Notre Dame will win by more than that, but it very well could be a push. But give me the Fighting Irish. I'm going to lay the 7.
Yeah, that Notre Dame defense and the fact that Indiana has not played anybody at all of consequence this year, Brandon, except once, and they got crushed. Where are you going with this one?
Yeah, you also aren't going to get an island because I am also on Notre Dame. So either Paul or maybe TJ have an opportunity. It's going to be a fascinating matchup just because Indiana has the best run defense in the entire country. But Jeremiah Love is something different, and I think Notre Dame, they've been one of the best teams in the country, if not the best team since mid-September. Hoosiers haven't put anybody. Give me Notre Dame.
Full disclosure. I would love for Indiana to remain a Cinderella story in the playoffs. We're making picks here, and I just can't see it. I'll tell you this, Paul. TJ's taking Indiana, so there is no island opportunity for you. So which way are you going, Notre Dame or the Hoosiers?
Well, I'm as sure as this pick on Indiana ever since Newt Rockne and the Gipper were playing on the sidelines. This is how confident I am, Notre Dame. And I can't believe that you, Jacob, would say, well, this is tough. I mean, we're going to have an island for India. Well, we got an island, and that's a foolish island. But he's not here that I can say anything about. But I can tell you this right now. It's Notre Dame by 14 or 21.
Wow.
Come on, Tommy. You know good and well.
I don't disagree, man. Yeah. I don't disagree.
I don't disagree. I'm not sure it'll be that big of a gap, but I do think Notre Dame will cover.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. PJ Glasser, for what it's worth, yesterday, I think, I'll have to go back and listen on the Odyssey app. He was on Indiana there. All right, let's go to SMU at Penn State. SMU, fellas, is getting 8.5 points on the road here. Tommy, you go first. Is there recency bias in that, you know, they weren't able to get it done against Clemson in that ACC championship game?
Yeah, I think there's part of that too, but I also think that, you know, just what is everybody's looking at Penn State, I think, a little bit too overly optimistic. I wouldn't be shocked if Penn State wins the game, but 8.5 is a lot of points, man. Give me the Mustangs. I'm going to take those points. I think it could be a touchdown-type game, and Penn State could win the game by a touchdown, but still that doesn't cover the number. So I'm going to take SMU, and I'll take the 8.5.
Okay, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, everything when I look at it tells me Penn State. The defensive line of Penn State's really good. Tyler Warren's one of the best players in the country. The home field, the cold. I mean, that's probably something Paul's going to talk about. A Texas team in the cold, how are they going to react? But I just like this SMU team too much. 8.5 is too much, especially we saw them rally last week. Do they have another one? At least get a backdoor cover in them. And also, just to tease my next pick, I think one of these teams, there's got to be an upset or at least a close one somewhere. So why not in Happy Valley? Give me SMU.
Paul, Penn State's sitting there as the home favorite.
Go ahead.
Nobody's taking them yet.
You know something? I was thinking I was going to get an island with SMU. I just thought you guys would think, you know, traditional Big Ten, physical up front, both sides of the football, able to run the football, able to throw them, and it's at home. You guys, I thought you guys would just say this is going to be Penn State. 8.5 is a lot of points, but they cover. But SMU is physical up front on defense. They may have a combo of the two best inside players that I've seen. Just, you know, casually watching, you know, football on television. I really like the physicality of SMU. Got a lot of speed all over the field. But gosh, you guys might just give me an island on Penn State. You know something? I'm changing what I came in ready to do, which was take SMU. I'll go ahead and take Penn State. I'll go ahead and do it. I'll give the 8.5. I'm going to take Penn State since nobody else wants them.
Well, TJ's taking SMU, and I will say this. I'll take SMU, but, Paul, I would have done the same thing if that island was there for me. I would have taken the island. I don't think this one's hard for me. I think Penn State's better than SMU. Are they more than a touchdown better? That's where it gets a little tricky. I was surprised to see this line this big. So I'm just going to take the points, but I think a Penn State island is a really good island to get. Speaking of a lot of points, let's go to the third one, Brandon, and you can start us off here. Clemson's getting 12 at Texas. 12. PJ Glasser said the Clemson team total under is his favorite play, but this line is a hot mess. Are you comfortable with that big of a line at the Longhorns?
There's one reason that their team total under is exactly what PJ was on, because against SEC opponents this year, Clemson has scored 3 points and 14 points.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they're going to be able to keep up with this Texas pass game. I like Texas at home. That is going to be a fun environment. Give me the Longhorns.
Paul?
Well, you know, Clemson might be the worst team that's in this entire, you know, final 12 teams. Maybe I'm probably ahead of Arizona State. But Clemson's not very good. I mean, well, when I say not very good, you know, they backed into the
comparatively final speaking.
Comparatively yep. speaking, it's not as good a team. It's certainly not as good a team as some of those national championship teams were. That's for sure. This is going to be an easy game for Texas. Clemson is really just more than anything, sort of like a middle of the rung. You know, Big 12 team, as far as I'm concerned. I'm taking Texas. I don't even know that this game could also be one of those 14 to 21 point games. I'm taking Texas. And they may rout them, Jacob. They may just blow them out.
TJ's taking Clemson, so there's not going to be any island here. I'm not betting this game, I'll tell you that. I guess I'll take Texas at home. I'm with you. I think of the teams involved, Clemson is the worst team
probably.
Of all 12.
Probably.
And that's, you know, the rankings played that out, but I'll take Texas. Man, I hate 12 points, Tommy. Which side of this are you on?
I think this is an absolutely terrible matchup for Clemson. I think it's a really bad matchup for Clemson, not only with the SEC, but like Clemson wants to run the football, and Texas is not going to let them run the football. I think that's going to be the major factor in this game. I think Texas gets it done up front and just overpowers what Clemson wants to do on the road in Austin. I actually don't mind the 12 points. I think it'll be more like, I don't know, at least two touchdowns, if not three. I think Texas wins big at home to move on. Give me the Longhorns. I'm going to lay the points.
All right, let's go on to the NFL. The first game up happens to be the Chiefs, Paul, and you're leading us off here. The Chiefs are 3.5. The hook is in play here. Home favorites against the Houston Texans.
Well,
we've all talked about Mahomes, but are we forgetting about Houston?
Well, and they're not a bad football team. I mean, I don't think they're a bad football team. We talked about them at the beginning of the year that they could be a contender to, you know, get into the Super Bowl. Well, I didn't know if they would or not. Still don't know. But I can tell you this right now. It all boils down to Mahomes. So I've got several questions to ask Tommy and see what he says. Can Mahomes move right to left in the pocket?
Should be able to.
Can he move up forwards and backwards in the pocket?
Should be able to.
Can he pick up those, you know, 10 to 14 yard first downs if he needs to on a scramble?
Sure, absolutely.
Can he create out in space?
He can.
Well, then I might want to just take tennis. I might want to take Kansas City. But here's what I think, Tommy. I don't think he can do as good a job as you're thinking. I'm taking the Texans. I'm taking the Texans because I'm not sure of the answers that Tommy seems to be so sure of. I'm taking.
Well, it's the right question. And look, Andy Reid has said he practiced in full. That, you know, it's we don't know until we see him in game action. History would tell us he can do those things. TJ, by the way, is taking the Chiefs. It's not a Mahomes thing for me and his ankle. I'm also going to take the Texans here because I want to see two things. I want to see Joe Tooney at left tackle against one of the best pass rushes in football. And I want to see if the Chiefs pass rush can replicate what it did a week ago. If the Chiefs pass rush can replicate, I think they'll cover this number. If they go back to not being able to put pressure on CJ Stroud, and we know what the Texans can do on the defensive line, like basically for me, it's just do it again, Chiefs. Show me that you'll run the ball that way again, and show me that you can get after the passer that way again. But until then, the Texans are way better than the Browns. And, you know, close games have been the Chiefs' MO. That hook at 3.5, I think the Chiefs win the game, but I think the Texans cover. I'll take Houston. Tommy?
Last hour, we talked about how, you know, great the Houston defense is, and they force takeaways. They get to the quarterback. They do all those things that could really, really hurt the Chiefs. But here's the thing. Patrick Mahomes has had 4 games in a row without throwing an interception, when earlier in the season, that was a huge issue for him. He's really cleaned things up a lot, and he's looking for 5 games in a row in this game tomorrow to not throw a pick. And I don't know, the bottom line for me with that is he's really cleaned up his game, and I think that he can continue doing that, especially considering he's dominated the Texans in his career. He's only thrown 1 pick historically when he's played Houston. I think he'll be able to go, and I think he'll have a great game. I'm going to tail them. I haven't picked the Chiefs in quite a while, but I'm going to tail what the Chiefs did a week ago. Give me Kansas City. I'll lay the 3.5.
Brandon, the Chiefs have not covered 3.5 in 5 out of the last 6 weeks they've played. The only time they've covered it is against the Browns, who have, 3 wins on the season. Which side of this are you on?
Against the Browns and now against the Texans. I think they're just going to be able to make just enough plays. I think Patrick Mahomes, I mean, he's still good enough to overcome a little bit of an ankle. Hollywood Brown is back, which is going to be big for them. Then Paul always loves the narrative. This team is playing for rest. By the time we make picks next Friday, this team could already start resting for the second round of the playoffs. So not confident about it, but I'll take the Chiefs at home.
It's the number. I like the Chiefs to win, but I think it'll be another close game. I can't believe it's at 3.5, quite frankly. I thought it'd be at 2.5 or even less, but here we go. There it is. The other is this is a fun one too here. Steelers at Ravens -6.5. I think I'm up first. So TJ technically is TJ's taking the Steelers. I'm gonna surprise Tommy here. I'm taking the Ravens.
What?
The Steelers suck offensively without George Pickens. Now, we know, though, that in this game, historically, they keep it close, and the Steelers can keep it close and probably will keep it close. But, man, they just can't score without George Pickens. They're a totally different offense without him, and he's been ruled out already. And, you know, the Ravens, they stop the run better than any team in football. So now it's on Russell Wilson, but it's on Russell Wilson without George Pickens. for that reason, I'll take the Ravens, and I think that they can actually cover the number finally in this series, in which they almost never do. I just don't like what I'm seeing out of Pittsburgh when Pickens isn't on the field. Tommy?
It's wild to me that the Steelers have a better record than the Ravens and have beat them straight up earlier this season, and they're huge underdogs on the road.
That's why it's got to Baltimore.
That's got to be why, but that's wild to me that the line is where it's at. Here's what I think is going to happen. The Ravens aren't going to let the Steelers sweep them in the series, and also I think Baltimore is going to hang at least 30 in this game. I do know T.J. Watt is expected to play, so that will help Pittsburgh. But at the same time, I think that the Ravens, they're pretty pissed off by what happened in their last meeting. I think Baltimore comes out ready to play. I think Lamar has a great Lamar game. I think Derrick Henry explodes. I think Baltimore goes off. And if Baltimore can hang at least 30 on the Steelers without George Pickens, I don't see Pittsburgh being able to match anywhere close to that. So give me the Ravens. I'm going to lay the points.
If they hang 30 on the Steelers, that would be impressive. Brandon, this is an always, always close game. The Ravens always let them hang around. Can they beat them by 6.5 points?
No, George Pickens, no, they can't. Simply enough, I'm on the Ravens for that lone fact.
And that seems so foolish, too. Like, George Pickens is not a six-point player, whatever it might be, a three-point. You know,
He's the only guy that Russell Wilson throws the ball to.
I know. We've all watched him with and without him. And it's not even that he's the guy, right, that is piling up. It's just his presence there seems to make everything else on the offense work better. Paul, we've got picks on both sides of this here, so no island for you. Which side will you take?
Well, you know something? You just got to love the creativity of the Ravens and what they can do, and a quarterback that can create all over the place, all over the field, the ability to run the football. I mean, we talk about the Steelers, you know, running the football, but, you know, the Ravens have the ability to run the football as well. I think this game is one of those games that I could flip a coin on, but I'm going to go with the Ravens. My gut says go with the Ravens. And when my gut talks to me, I eat.
So TJ gets a Steelers island.
Can we clip that one too? That was great.
That was great.
Vikings, Seahawks, Brandon, just because it's your Vikings, I'll go out of order here and let you lead us off. The Vikings are laying 3 points on the road in one of the more difficult places to play against an 8-win team. I cannot imagine, though, you're going away from your boys there in Minnesota.
Even if I wasn't a Vikings fan, I would probably still pick them in the spot. They're still playing for the one seed in the NFC. I just like, especially with TJ Hawkinson, ever since he's coming back, Blake Cashman coming back on defense, they're rolling. They're looking good. Give me the Vikings minus the 3.
Paul, Seattle has, you know, before last week in that disappointing game at home against Green Bay, they've been on a heater. Like they won 4 in a row going into that game, 2 of those against Arizona, who we know is pretty good. They had the win at San Francisco. Are they being disrespected by being 3-point home underdogs here?
Hold on just a second. Tommy, do you have a coin?
I don't carry. Yeah, no, I don't.
Dang it, I don't have a coin either, because I'll tell you what, I'm ready to flip a coin. I don't have a feel for this game. I'm ready to flip a coin. I don't know. What can I – rock, Rick? Nah, that's okay. I'll just – in my mind, I'm flipping a coin. It's heads. I call heads. It's tails. I'm taking the Seahawks.
Okay, you may get an island there. TJ's on the Vikings, and I'm on the Vikings as well. I think that Minnesota is being criminally underrated right now. You cannot convince me with conviction that Detroit and or Philadelphia are heads and shoulders better than Minnesota. What does Minnesota not do well? They can run the ball, they can throw the ball, and they play great defense. They've got good pass rushers. It's the Darnold effect. That's what it is. We talked to PJ Glasser about it yesterday. Like, that's the reason. But, guys, he's playing well. Like, and we're week 16 now. I don't think the wheels are falling off at this point. I'm going to take the Vikings. Seahawks are in trouble here. I just think the Vikings are a better team. So, 3 points, no hook. I'll take the sucker bet there and take the Vikings. Tommy?
I'm going to take the Vikings as well, but it's for a totally different reason. I think it's less about the Vikings, honestly, and more about the Seahawks. I mean, Geno Smith is banged up and, suffered that knee injury a week ago. But even when Geno has been healthy recently, the Seahawks have struggled offensively. They're down in the bottom part of the NFL as far as, you know, yards per play and all of that. In fact, they rank 21st in the league. So, like, the offense has struggled even with Geno healthy, and we don't know how effective he'll be able to be after suffering that injury a week ago. I think the Vikings have too many different ways to beat the Seahawks, so I'll lay those points, and I guess I'll give TJ that island when it comes to the Seahawks, because I believe in the Vikings.
No, you give Paul
game.
That.
Paul the island. Did. That's right.
I get the island.
I'll give Paul the island.
Paul, give the Paul that's island. That's six games.
I don't have a
I think Paul
game.
And TJ are separate on five picks this
wow.
week.
And they're the leaders right now. We make fun, but, you know, the results are the results. There's your picks on a Friday. That's it, fellas. That's six games. I here we go, college football playoffs. I can't wait for it. We'll see how good this round is. The next round is going to be fantastic. But we'll get to all of it as we make our way through, and we'll have the results for you next week. We're going to keep picking games as long as we can pick games. Brandon, enjoy your Friday. Paul, we'll stick around today. Here. Let's start to talk about Shockers Wildcats tomorrow night. That's where we head next on Sports Daily. Don't go away.
See you, Brandon.
On the Odyssey app, just search for KFH. Well, that'll be an interesting show, the Jerome Tang Show. It's so wild to me. We talk about, you know, this week and how it's been for the Wildcats, and you go back and in a game where they battled back, where Coleman Hawkins, and I know he didn't deliver late, but had one of the better games he's had all season. You took him to overtime and all those things. All that stands out is the lecture after the game to the fans, which was a small part of what he even had to say after the game. I'll be curious to see if he clarifies any of that, backs off any of that, what it's been like for him there this week. But listen in tonight, you might get an indication of that. And of course, they come in and play the Shockers on Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think, really intriguing on the way that the Wildcats rebound and respond after what happened on Tuesday. You know, because again, you know, Drake is a good team, and they've been good this season. And so it was going to be a tough task all along for the Wildcats. But I think what was the most disappointing for me was how far behind they fell early on. They did battle back, but it wasn't quite enough, you know, and they ultimately lost that game. They shouldn't have dug the hole that they got themselves into out of the gate on Tuesday night anyway. They've got to avoid that tomorrow night against the Shockers. And, you know, and honestly, both teams, and this is what I think is so incredible about this matchup tomorrow night in Cycoke Arena, is both of these teams in their most recent game dug themselves into early holes. And so which team is not going to do that tomorrow night? I honestly, at this point, don't know.
I would suspect that both teams play much better than they did earlier this week. I think there probably was some look ahead, at least for the Shockers. But for K-State, Paul, and we asked him Fitzgerald this yesterday, and he brought up a good point. Jerome Tang got up in front of the fans and told them storm the court one time and then get used to it, essentially. And, you know, since that first year, the fans haven't been used to it. They just don't have many big wins. They don't have any big wins this year. So I don't think now is the time to be deflecting back to even the knucklehead fans that say things in a player's direct messages. But who cares? You got to ignore that stuff. You can't let that become a distraction. And again, maybe it motivates this team. You know, maybe creating that us versus them mentality motivates this team. We'll find out. And in that case, that's good psychology for a coach.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like that's the intent.
Well,
it feels like a little bit of excuse making.
Well, let's examine the ramifications on a loss and a win by both teams. Let's say K-State wins this game. Well, you know something, that's good. But it's against a team that's going to be viewed later on in the year as not a big win. It's not a
because
game changer.
Because of the loss to UNC.
That's right. But there's reasons. So, I mean, K-State goes on. I mean, does this lift their season? No. Does a win over Wichita State? Hey, we won at Wichita State.
It doesn't mean
a thing.
You're right.
Now, but let's examine the other situation that could happen, and that's a Wichita State win. Let's say Wichita State wins. Well, that propels the Shockers on into league play. That's a good stimulus. That's a good thing. That shows that they're getting where they want to be, that the system's starting to work, and it's all positive. On the other hand, if K-State loses to Wichita State, the wheels come off the wagon. There's an excellent possibility for that.
Yeah.
You think you've been trolled this week? Wait till next week.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. There's not it's not really like a win-win for K-State
because of
Wichita State's loss to UMKC.
Right.
Now, I will say it's a massive win for Wichita State.
And a massive loss for K-State.
Psychologically. But the messaging earlier in the week from Coach Tang was that Wichita State is an at-large type team. They may very well be an at-large type team. I think they probably are in at least that stratosphere. But for the rest of the season, they're not going to be viewed that way because of the loss to UMKC.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that will never be able to happen for them now. And that probably does make it. That sucks for K-State.
Because then you know, you don't get that taken off your resume. You know Wichita State doesn't get a loss to UMKC taken off of their resume when March comes around. That's the I think the most unfortunate part about that loss for the Shockers. And there are so many factors that play into the outcome of this game tomorrow night. But if we're only looking at if we're doing a vibe check on both teams, if we're only looking at the vibes for both of these teams entering into the game, I think the vibes are probably higher for Wichita State than K-State, even though the Shockers just lost to UMKC. Because I think that, you know, that was something that sort of shocked the system a little bit. It's like jumping into an ice bath and it kind of shocks you. And then you're like, what happened? What did we do? Like, we got to refocus. And I think that that's what Wichita State and Paul Mills have focused on as this week has gone on post Tuesday night's game. On the flip side, the conversation surrounding K-State is still what happened with Jerome Tang in postgame and the comments that he made and, you know, kind of distracting away from the issues at hand with the Wildcats and all of that. So if we're only going off of vibes, I think vibes are actually better right now for Wichita State going into the game tomorrow night, even though they lost to UMKC on Tuesday.
Yeah, maybe going in, but that could turn quickly.
Absolutely.
Right? They could be just as bad. The shot, I agree with you. If the Shockers respond with a good performance tomorrow.
And that's wild how that, I mean, because if you just looked at the final score of both games on Tuesday night and you didn't know anything else, you had no other context, you would probably say that the vibes would be higher for Kansas State because Drake is a good team and, you know, it was a 3-point deficit at the end of the day. And then you look at what happened with Wichita State and they lost a bye game at home, right? So just by looking at it on paper, you'd be like, man, things are probably falling apart a lot worse at Wichita State than at K-State. But then when you add in the context of everything that happened post-game with both coaches and everything like that, I mean, yeah, come on. I feel like Wichita State is probably in a better place mentally entering the game tomorrow than the Wildcats are.
That's almost hard to fathom.
It is, and you're right. And I'm just looking here, and I have, you know, some. So right now I'm looking. Northern Iowa is in the top 100 of KenPom. Let me see if Minnesota. St. Louis is not. St. Louis has really struggled. Minnesota has fallen out to some degree. Let's see. Let's check one more. East Tennessee State. They have fallen just outside of the top 100. But I think Western Kentucky, Northern Iowa. Like, you look at some of the wins for Wichita State, and I think you just, yeah, Western Kentucky's right around 100. The reality is they've got better wins than K-State does. Even with the, you know, the Florida drumming and the disappointing loss to UMKC, the Shockers at least have a handful of quality wins. I can't sit here right now and tell you without going line by line on K-State's schedule with these cupcakes, which of those was their quality. They don't have one. They just don't have one yet. And so now for them, to Paul's point, if they beat Wichita State, but all of a sudden now you're looking at Wichita State, who will have to deal with the ramifications metrically. I mean, they're 113. This would be K-State's best win of the season, no question. But they fell 32 spots in the net rankings after that UMKC loss. 32 spots. So, you know, for K-State fans, and this is not in any way a knock on Wichita State. We all are highly supportive of Wichita State. We want them to do well. For K-State fans, that's not going to be good enough. And the reality is, even if Tuesday's games did not happen, this line, this, you know, this is not, it's not quite a pick 'em probably. I think K-State would be maybe lightly favored, but these are pretty two even teams right now. And so K-State's got to deal with that reality now. Like there's not a world where K-State fans are going to hang a banner because of a win over Wichita State because of what happened to Wichita State now on Tuesday. That's for K-State fans.
Yeah.
For Wichita State, though, if Wichita State brings K-State in front of the environment I envision tomorrow being very good and gets that win, that could be incredible for the program. One more thing. It doesn't really matter for K-State. They're playing their meaningful games in the Big 12, right? It matters for bragging rights. But
I think it matters going back to the vibe check. I think it matters for Jerome Tang to right the ship a little bit here
before
you get into Big 12 play. I think it does matter. I think it is important because you enter into Big 12 play flat. And on a losing streak, and you lose to Drake, then you lose to Wichita State, and then you get into Big 12 play. I mean, yeah, like I do think it matters, you know, with Kansas State and the outcome of the way that they enter conference play for sure.
I just mean to the resume. If they end up lose the rest of their games but finish in the top six of the Big 12, they'll be fine. They'll make the NCAA tournament. That's what I'm saying.
Perception wise,
like we all agree, like K-State's in kind of a no-win situation here.
I'm not like even looking at necessarily like Coleman Hawkins and what he can do. In my mind, I think the key matchup is going to be Brendan Housen, and can he shoot from long distance, and what can Wichita State do to defend that? Because going back to the DePaul game a week ago when the Shockers were on the road, that's what did the Shockers in down the stretch was DePaul hit their three-pointers. And everybody knew going into the game that's what DePaul does is shoot threes. Wichita State has gone up against several teams in the non-con that shoot the three really well. And Kansas State has their main guy in Housen, who is their sharpshooter from downtown. If they can limit him, if they can get bodies on him, make sure he doesn't get space to shoot those threes, and if he does get threes up, have them be contested threes, I think that's going to be a key difference maker for Wichita State down the stretch in the game tomorrow.
I agree. And on the flip side of that, Paul, K-State better figure out how to run some offense that doesn't involve Hawson firing up 23s.
Yeah.
I'm fine if he does it. But that can't be the only way they generate offense, which has been their problem, right? They have to do anything else. ISO ball fire up threes has been the K-State offense for 2 years now, and it ain't working. Mm. They got to figure something else out.
Well, but that's what everybody does nowadays, whether it's the NBA. You just got to understand that's the mentality right now. You know, three, 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 three. And, you know, we've talked to coaches who have given us the philosophy, you know, you only got to make a third of the threes, and then you're shooting 50% from the twos. You know, how you play with the numbers, and that's the way that works.
But those are good threes. That's not just ISO ball fire away. Well, that's like setting up open looks at threes.
I got you. Yeah. It's a set play, run to perfection to open up a three and get a good look at the three. I got you. But I got one quick question for you, a little off the topic, because I like these kind of things. I find them fascinating. And that's going to be the crowd tomorrow. It is tomorrow, isn't it? Saturday. The crowd at Koch Arena. I think it's going to be fascinating. Question to you guys, who has more fans? Will there be more purple, or will there be more golden black? Will there be more purple in the stands than Wichita State? I'm just because there's the potential that you could have 6,000 people from K-State there versus, say, 4,000 with Wichita State. What do you guys think? I'm just curious what you think.
I'm guessing 60-40 Shocker fans, probably.
Oh, you mean the 60 is Shocker fans?
Yeah. I think people have had – this will be why I think this, despite two – like, this should be a great atmosphere, because this is a game people have had circled for a while. This isn't like your walk-up traffic game.
Right, I got you.
This is a game people have planned on since the beginning of the season on both sides. And I think if you're the Shockers and you're a diehard Shockers fan, that's what you don't want to see happen, right? And so there's a little bit of a defend the home court mentality probably there. An absolute total guess. I'd guess 60-40 Shockers. Hmm. You disagree with that, Tommy? You think it'd be –
I think it's somewhere around there. I honestly don't care as much as of the split. I just want it to be a good crowd. I want there to, whether it's because like again, like things are not positive right now, right this second for either team. I don't want that to dissuade people from either on either side showing up tomorrow night. I just want it to be a good crowd. It looks like, and I don't know about, you know, if we're looking at a projected sellout or what that's going to be, but I do know that regardless, it should be the largest crowd in the Paul Mills era at Wichita State. Bottom line.
I would think so. We talked about this yesterday a little bit, and just briefly at the end of our conversation with Fitz, and I've been thinking about this now for since yesterday. I can't wait to get Kevin Saul back in here to ask him this question. If you're a game scheduler or you have anything to do with that, with what we know about the changing landscape, I would envision down the road, and I don't know how quickly, that we get far fewer bye games and far more high quality, true road home and home situations. Because if everybody now has to raise more money, and obviously this doesn't apply to a school like Kansas, who's going to sell out no matter what, but Wichita State and K-State, it very much applies to, who don't sell out all their games right now. Why would you ever waste your time, A, spending the money on a bye game, and B, not scheduling as many high-profile games as you possibly can to try and drive that ticket revenue? I mean, hasn't always been the case because there are a lot of things, but right now, like, money is the biggest factor for every college across the country. Why wouldn't you schedule? I would call every team. I don't care if I think they're going to beat me by 50. I'd call them all because I'd want the big crowds because I got to raise money.
And now, I don't think you're going to see a lot of the big multi-team events around the holidays in the years to come. I read an article a few weeks ago about the Maui Invitational and how historic the Maui Invitational is, but it was on the heels of Dan Hurley at UConn saying he wouldn't take his team back to Maui, and about how, just in general, teams lose money when they go to Maui. The exposure is good for them, but they're expected, they have to pay for everything. They pay for the flights and the hotel. They pay for everything. And it ends up being a money loser for teams, whereas you've got these other, like, kind of one-off events where, you know, like Kansas is going to go play Duke in Vegas for one game and they make a bunch of money doing it, how that kind of starts to be more of the norm than what we've seen, you know, over the last few decades with these multi-team events.
Makes sense.
Somebody in Maui has got to foot that bill, yes. But like we saw Kansas announced into that big Vegas tournament, that's a moneymaker.
It's absolutely a moneymaking opportunity.
For sure, there has to be. I hope that one of the side effects of the money situation in college now is that we get nothing but high-profile pre-conference games. I think it'd be blast.
Hey, there's a reason why throughout this entire show, and the Jayhawks have a game this weekend. They're playing Brown. Are we going to talk about Kansas playing Brown?
No,
probably.
Not quite.
I mean, we're not. Nobody cares.
We won't make it to that today. Kansas plays Brown this weekend, by the way.
Yeah.
and that's the only game they play for 2 weeks before they get into conference play. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're coming right back. It's Albrocht. It's Caster. It's Savage. Jad Chambers producing for us. It's a Friday as we wrap up the week here on Sports Daily.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody, here on Sports Daily. We got college football playoffs for the first time ever. What is the distance? We had a week off, right, between conference championship games in this first round, a full week off. I think that's a mistake. I think they should correct that. There's no reason that these teams shouldn't immediately begin playing the playoff games immediately following the conference championship games, because what you've got is teams in this that didn't play a conference championship game, like Notre Dame and Indiana. It kind of just feels like a bowl game. Like, we haven't seen these teams play football in a really long time. And I do think, as we're going to want to tinker this and, you know, tweak and massage the way it looks, I'm looking at Indiana The last time we saw Indiana play, fellas, November 30th. Okay. The last time we saw Notre Dame play, November 30th. 20 days since either of those two teams have played. You can't have that, Tommy. We got to be playing these games as quick as we possibly can. They don't need a week off after conference championship week. They need to just immediately pick up and play again.
Well, and on top of that, too, I mean, just from the viewing public, I had a hard time last week. And nothing against Army-Navy. I know it's tradition, all of that. But I'm like, can I watch something? Is there something else I can watch? Whether it's Army-Navy or the FCS championship semifinal, whatever. Like, I get it. That's fine. But there's no reason, again, why we can't play at least a couple of games, especially for the teams that are not playing in conference championship games.
And the other thing is, like, the teams with a bye get another week off. Like, no offense to, and I agree with you, no offense to those other games, but here's what happens, Paul, with college football. And this has always been the issue, and I think it's why there's never the correct amount of momentum heading into whatever the championship games have been. It's because we just forget about it. Right. Whatever it is, like, we don't have the kind of attention span. You can't expect us for 3 weeks to sit on our hands and care about Indiana. We just can't. You can't do that. You've got the NFL taking attention away at that point. Now college basketball is getting into the mix. You've got the NBA and whatever it is that they're doing. Like, you're doing the sport such a disservice by spending so much time away before you actually play these games. The week off has got to go. Now, you're never going to have the perfect scenario, because let's say Notre Dame was a top four seed and had a bye, right? And their final game was November 30th. If they were a top four seed, we still wouldn't see them until next week. They would have spent an entire month without playing a football game.
Mm-hmm.
That can't happen.
Now, the good news is, when that happens, you know, you got kids that might be dinged up a little bit, you know, and they have a chance to recuperate and get, you know, but you can only go to the weight room so often. You can only go to the practice field so often. You can only put the pads on so often. You said a word in your previous monologue just about 3 minutes ago. You used the word momentum, didn't you? You used that. And there's a reason you use that, because at this point of the year, momentum is everything. Kids focused is everything. And you're right. There can be such a thing as too much time off. And so I don't know that it's quite the advantage. But, you know, there's certainly a way that I don't think it would harm the college game to start playing in the playoffs right after the conference championships.
Of course it doesn't.
Why not? Every other level does it. Everybody's doing it. And so I'm just thinking to myself, that would be fine with me, and I think it would be good for football, because you're right. There was a void, wasn't there? Because all this is lined up, all this is ready to go with the 12 teams in the tournament, and yet you can't go. And that's frustrating. And you're thinking, why not? There's nothing on. And by the way, if you're a TV broadcaster, Jacob, you can answer this question. Wouldn't you kind of want to have the monopoly just a little bit with those teams that you're going to give up once you get into the, you know, you're getting close to the playoffs and all the runs and races in the NFL? Wouldn't you just think it'd be almost an advantage from a broadcasting standpoint?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, to the level of, think about it this way. The season ends on a selection Sunday. We're playing in college basketball championship games on a selection Sunday. The NCAA tournament has started 3 days later.
Mm-hmm.
3 days on the play-in games.
On the play-ins, right? That's right. Yeah. On the play-ins, that would be
there's
right.
You're right on it, and that keeps the momentum. Could you imagine if they did selection Sunday and then waited 2 weeks before they get into the actual tournament?
that would be hard to imagine.
We're fired up?
That's
no.
Right.
I don't understand why we always overthink college football.
You know something?
Are you telling me that if these were second round games this weekend, we wouldn't be probably more fired up for them?
Oh, that's right.
Absolutely would be.
Yeah.
Because we would have had them. We would have never stopped. There would have never been a gap in college football. It's why bowl games are always like, oh, yeah, they've got bowl games to play. For me, anyway. And I think most casual fans, that's the way they feel about it.
I do like, though, that we're now officially in the time of year where, starting today, actually, where bowl games start early. I think there's a game that starts at like 11 this morning. So as soon as we're done here,
we've already had a few.
I might flip, but not early in the day. Like in the evenings, yeah, they've been going on this week.
I'm going to flip that on here in just a few minutes. There is one bowl game outside of the playoff that I give any rip about, and it's K-State's bowl game because we pay attention to K-State.
But you're not telling me that you're not at least going to have it on in the background?
What about West Virginia and Memphis just a few days ago?
I mean, coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, Ohio and Jacksonville State in the Staff DNA Cure Bowl. That's coming up at 11 o'clock this morning.
I will not watch a second of that game, and I'll bet you, if you're being honest, neither of you will.
Tulane and Florida.